Welcome, everyone. My name is Jin-S Kim, and I'm founder and president of Underground Seminary. Let me just give you a little background about how this seminary came about. Well, first of all, really appreciate people that have come from near and far for this celebration. It's really special to us that you're here, and we feel really honored by your presence. A number of years ago, I was thinking about how to improve our internship program. I myself was a seminary intern many years ago and had been mentored by some great people. And I thought we had a pretty good program of helping those who felt called to pastoral ministry into a kind of training where they could have a smooth transition into that. But it took so long, longer and longer, I felt like, to undo some of the habits of thinking, habits of the mind, habits of the heart, habits of the body, that really needed to be undone for people to move into lifelong, serious discipleship and pastoral leadership. And I realized more and more that a lot of what had to be undone was the learning that people went through in conventional seminary, especially expectations of a kind of a middle-class lifestyle, professionalism, and credentialing, safety, security. Basically, everything Jesus said to forsake, to live a risk-filled life for the gospel. So how do we move people from a preoccupation with security, status, not a lot of money, but enough to get by, and especially in the Presbyterian mainline tradition that many of us are part of, a kind of a respectability that went along with that whole package. How do we get leaders in the church, future leaders in the church, to embrace the kind of life that Jesus actually lived? Where, I mean, his reputation is stellar 2,000 years later, right? But in his lifetime, it wasn't. He was known as a glutton, a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and prostitutes and lowlifes. He was not favored by the Roman establishment, nor the Jewish leadership of his day. I'm old enough to know the transformation of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s reputation in the last 50 some odd years. I went to school in this country when we did not have an MLK day. I was a full-grown adult when I think Arizona finally was the 50th state to honor his day, and that was in the 90s. He was a polarizing, controversial figure. He was called a communist and was on our government watch list by the FBI all throughout his ministry. Only now is there a consensus, some 50 years later, that he was one of the great leaders of our time. It sometimes takes that long. But in Dr. King's day, in Rosa Parks' day, in Jesus' day, they were known to be troublemakers. So it's nice when history remembers us kindly, but how do we raise up courageous, faithful disciples, servants, who are willing to risk a bad reputation and questions and suspicion and skepticism from people all around us because we are doing the right thing so profoundly, so deeply, so courageously, so that we risk having the kind of reputation that these people had in their life and not much later? That's actually a pretty difficult challenge. None of us want a bad reputation. None of us want to be accused of things and arouse suspicion among people around us. But if we stick to that desire, then we also don't accomplish any of the things that Jesus actually did, nor his disciples. So we thought, instead of spending so much time having people unlearn the expectations of safety, security, respectability, What if we formed a seminary where we taught those values, the values that Jesus embodied right from the beginning of his ministry, where he faced the temptations of all those things and overcame them, and then spent the rest of his life and ministry living with courage and fearlessness? What if we started a seminary that actually taught those values, the values of Jesus' life and witness and character through and through? That's how we launched it. And anywhere that such an experiment is happening, we support. So on our website, for those of you who want to know more about this experiment, we listed 6 core values that we wanted to inculcate in our students. One is radical discipleship, following the way of Jesus through a life of solidarity and service with and for others. Second is community building, loving others to form mature, reconciling Christian community. Third is public witness, proclaiming God's peaceable reign out of the community's parabolic witness, meaning that our very life together serves as a parable, a constructive story for the world to see as an example. Critical pedagogy, uprooting the logic of empire in ourself that blocks the call to discipleship. In other words, how we teach is just as important as what we teach. Just sitting in a classroom with a blackboard or a whiteboard all day is not always the best way for people to learn. Fifth, fearless leadership, moving from self-preservation towards selfless advocacy. And finally, ecological sustainability, recognizing the kind of destruction we are inflicting on this planet, imagining and embodying sustainable ways of life in this world. These are the values that we have tried to adopt for ourselves and pass on to our first cohort of students. And with your support, we feel like something amazing has happened. And you'll hear from our students and some of what they've learned in these last 2 years. I want to say some words of thanks now. I want to thank my 2 co-conspirators, Laura Newby and John Nelson. As I was saying, when we had this internship program, Laura was just a regular member of our church like so many others. And she wanted to learn. She wanted to grow. She wanted to be discipled. But she looked around and said, but I don't want to go to a conventional seminary and turn out like all these people, like me and like our interns and like all the pastors she saw around her. I want real learning, deep learning, transformative learning, something that changes me at the molecular level, not just in my head. We looked for program after program, other places here in the Twin Cities, some master's degree of some kind, and we couldn't find anything. And so Laura is a very early inspiration for the kind of training that we needed. And that's why she's our chief strategist for the seminary. And I'd call her also the chief pedagogist, the one who shapes the way that we learn, how we learn. So I really want to thank Laura for the inspiration that she has been to our seminary and for the amazing leadership that she has exerted in every area possible. I also want to thank John Nelson. He was one of those early interns at our church who then became a coordinator of our internship program and currently serves at our church as a parish instructor. John also recognized the limits of our internship program in himself and in those that he led. John has so much potential. He's just one of the sharpest, most brilliant minds that I've ever encountered. He has a wonderful sense of people, warmth, kindness, generosity. And as I said, he is super sharp and able to perceive so many things before others. And he has shaped our curriculum. He's the one who, I don't know how he reads so many things so fast, but through John's insight, we have had some of the best books, articles, material out there that we've brought as good food for our students. And he's also been a co-instructor with me these last 2 years. So I've had a dream team with Laura and John, and without them, we would not be here. So thank you to both of you. Also want to thank our extended family, namely my wife, Sunbek, and John's wife, Sugi, who have given us the family environment for this experiment at our house and also at the Fink house. And we thank them a lot at the retreat. So thank you again here. Also, our students, just the best in the whole world. Isaac, Stephen, Jordan, and Laura as well. And it's been such a joy. I've looked forward to seminary every day that we have it. And that's not something that you will hear professors say. But they are such a joy. They are like family. They are family. And they've made it so easy to do this for the last 2 years. Also, the Fink House residents, most of our students live in the Fink House, four houses away, and you're all welcome to go. We were supposed to have a barbecue out there and all that. We're going to move it here. But still, after dinner, all of us are welcome to just walk over there, less than half a block, and see where they live and how they live and how they make life together. So people like Paul Moses and Marie Page and others who have lived at the Fink House to support the life of the seminary, we truly, truly thank you all. Also to family and friends and supporters of our seminary over the years, your prayers especially, your goodwill, also your financial support for those who have done that to get this off the ground. It's not an easy thing to launch a seminary from scratch. And all of you sitting here today have helped make that happen. So truly, from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you for your support in every way possible. We also need to thank Church of All Nations. It's the ministry of this church and the kind of ministers we need that has been the primary impetus for launching a seminary. We're a different kind of church, a diverse church, a church that is designed to be an intimate family and also to go to the ends of the earth, showing solidarity, compassion, and friendship with people anywhere, and caring about what people all over the world care about, which is justice and life and the opportunity for faith and love and hope. And not to mention the free use of this building and so many other ways that the church has been supportive of us. It's truly been a wonderful partnership. So thank you to Church of All Nations for believing in us and giving us this incubation out of which we've been birthed and now are 2 years old. So I think we're officially in our terrible twos now. Hopefully not too terrible. And also thanks to In-kyung, Jinsu's lovely wife, for making these corsages and these arrangements. All of the plants you see in our sanctuary today are from our church grounds. So thanks to all those who invest in making our church beautiful in a natural way, and to In-kyung for that. And finally, for those of you who want to continue to support us, on the back of your program at the bottom is a way to support us financially. We have a new cohort coming this fall. We're very excited about the students that will be here. And we're excited to continue this experiment and deepen our learning and our discipleship. There's a box in the back if you want to drop off check, but also online on our website, there's a way to give that way too. So thank you for your ongoing support. We hope that all of you, as much as possible, can stay for dinner and for fellowship and for introduction, especially to the Fink House, for those of you who haven't, and for those of you who have as well. Laura, as part of her final project, in addition to a paper, also wrote a poem and a song. And she's going to introduce that song for us here, and she'd like to present that to you.
Good afternoon. This is weird because I don't really sing, so it's kind of a weird thing to sing a song for you. But we've done a lot of work in our seminary, and a lot of it is very personal and very emotional. We engage our whole person in the seminary. And so this song that I wrote is a reflection on some of the themes that we've been discussing. Something that we talked a lot about during our 2 years together is a sense of floating, of not being anchored or grounded, that a lot of Americans experience, especially white European Americans. As that demographic included all of us in this first cohort, it was something we spent a lot of time digging into. What we discovered is a deep sense of rootlessness. Rootlessness from events like the transience of younger generations, leaving our homes and families to live in other places. In my family, it wasn't until my mom's generation that everyone, prior to that, everyone lived right around the family farm in a tight-knit village community. Beyond that, there's also a deeper sense of rootlessness of not knowing where our families came from before coming to America. I'm lucky to know in my mom's side of the family that we came here from Sweden, but I don't know much of my family's history prior to emigration. On top of that, they only came here 4 generations ago. In the American mind, 4 generations is a long time ago, but historically speaking, it's really not. Most of us who live here in America have lost or are losing the kind of deep and long-standing connection to our ancestors and homelands that the Bible talks about and that other cultures still retain. And finally, in addition to the philosophy of Platonic dualism embraced unconsciously by most of the West, we've even lost our connection to the earth, which is a central source of healing and grounding given to us by our Creator. We can get all inside our minds, and especially in our modern age, forget that beneath all this concrete and pavement, the earth is there holding us. We forget that there's literally nothing more grounding than putting our feet on the ground and knowing, as we've begun to say a lot in our seminary and church, from dust we came and to dust we shall return. So I wrote this song as a reflection on some of those themes. Like I said, I'm not much of a singer, but it comes from my heart, so I hope you enjoy it. To live among the trees, now the trees live among me, in a city where they're placed just so, where they can barely breathe and I can barely breathe. I miss my home, I miss my roots, I miss the earth beneath my feet. Keep your feet on the ground, plant your feet into the ground, kiss the earth, hug the soil, keep your feet on the ground. We left our homelands far behind, our hearts we left there too, with our favorite fields and streams. We left our grandmothers there and our grandfathers there. Memories fade in this new land, and the ancient ones grow dim. Keep your feet on the ground, plant your feet into the ground, kiss the earth, hug the soil, keep your feet on the ground. Long ago, our roots were deep, standing firm on Mother Earth, but the sword came with the cross. Deny the spirit of the land, leave your pagan ways behind, follow the cross up to the sky, and above all, don't look down. Keep your feet on the ground, plant your feet into the ground, kiss the earth, hug the soil, keep your feet on the ground. Keep your feet on the ground, plant your feet into the ground. No matter how long you've been lost, put your feet back in the ground. Keep your feet on the ground, plant your feet into the ground. Kiss the earth, hug the soil, keep your feet on the ground.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. My name is John. Pastor Jen introduced me a little bit ago. The song Laura just sang is one of the many things that came forward this past Wednesday as our students had a chance to share their final integrative projects. It was a rich, rich time of sharing. Everybody read an integrative paper and also offered other things at times as well for a good 35, 40 minutes, and then we processed it with each other. I am sorry we don't have a chance where you can all hear that here, but our students have prepared out of that 5 minutes or so of a piece to share with you about what this experience has been like for them. So I want to invite them to come forward, share a little bit about their journey, and encourage you to ask them much more because they have way more to share. So thank you.
Hi, family. I'm so excited to be here today. I'm Stephen Forsyth and the youngest member of the Underground Seminary, which I guess is why they're having me to go first, setting the bar low. I have been a member of this church and congregation for the last 5 years and have lived in Minneapolis for that time. There's nowhere that I love more than this place. There's no people that speak to me more. And that goes for everyone, even the people that don't go to this church but have made Minneapolis home for me. I felt so supportive here and loved and like I can really be who I am. I'm probably going to say thanks like a lot through this, so sorry in advance. But it truly has been a blessing to be here. The song that Sugi played in the opening is a song that asks our mothers, sisters, brothers, siblings to walk with us, for our family to carry us, and the spirit of water carrying us to the ocean. And I have had that spirit carry me. I remember very distinctly, because I had it reflected to me recently in our retreat, how I used to walk around this church, really afraid, and also exhausted constantly, to say the least, and also wanting so much more. I wanted to have roots and to be able to give back and provide for our family here. And I wasn't there. It wasn't the place I was in. And I was so thankful when I heard that this church was opening a seminary, and that out of that, I would be nurtured and would have that opportunity to gain roots. And they didn't mention that it was going to be so hard. but it was. And 2 years later, I feel alive. I don't wander the same way. I move confidently. My knowledge base has expanded, but that's been like the most minor thing. I'm so filled with hope and life that I never had before. And I'm not scared in the same way I was either. I feel like I have been called to be a disciple and to be a disciple in this way. And it's not easy by any means, but it's a big shift that I really love feeling a part of. I'd also be remiss if I didn't mention that that walk is again because of all of you. Whether you're parents of the other seminarians or a member of this church that's held my hand and walked me through all of the challenges I've gone through these last 2 years, it means the world to me that you're here. Like I said, our seminary was not just a fun one, but a hard one, where challenging conversations happened all the time. Our course load was maintainable, we made sure of that, but it was consistently rigorous. Sometimes it felt like I was swimming in a rip current while I tried to get my heart to understand one of our new topics. I was definitely moving, but I couldn't always tell if I was really getting anywhere. Often I would come to church and I'd share the puzzlings of what was going on in my heart, and people would assure me that I was getting somewhere, or I'd come to work and people would do the same. And that reflection for me is the only reason I grew. We learned so much from topics like global history, economics, and the history of the Bible, to really diverse skills like gardening, cooking, building a house, counseling and preaching. Every new fact or skill I learned, someone amongst you would delight in. It reminded me that all of this learning and hard work had an immediate purpose. I could use my painting skills to help a friend with their apartment, or my knowledge of economics to explain meta-economic shifts to people suffering from insane amounts of debt or oppressive feelings in their work environment. Everything I did had meaning because you gave it meaning. You guided me by my hand and taught me how to speak again, how to walk again, and most importantly, how to love myself again. Seminary ending is clearly a new beginning for Isaac, Jordan, Laura, and I. We're all stepping into completely different roles, but roles that are completely informed by what we did these last 2 years and completely informed by all of you. We're stepping out into the community, hoping that our work deconstructing the many blocks to forming healthy communities will give us the ability to form the same culture that we grew up in here. Every day I see myself doing this more and more. I can't help but reach out and touch the beautiful spirits of the people around me. I can't help but celebrate the growth that I've seen in myself, and I can finally bring it forth here. I can't help to smile and cry with the people who are always fighting, always growing, and always teaching. Thank you all for being those people.
I'd like to start with a quote from one of our seminary readings, Woman in Nature by Susan Griffin. When the water approaches me, the shape of the wave is changed, and when the tide ebbs, you will see, I too have changed. I'm Jordan Wright. I moved from San Diego to attend Underground Seminary. People thought I was crazy for many reasons, including leaving the perpetually sunny 75-degree weather to move to this cold or extraordinarily humid tundra. But I wouldn't have had it any other way. It has been 2 years, roughly 730 days of change, 8% of my life spent reconditioning my whole self to be more resilient, loving, and grounded. Seminary has been one of the most immersive things that I've ever done. My dad asked me if doing character formation was hard work. That made me laugh. We traveled, we ate amazing food every day, and we loved one another well. Not hard work at all. The most intense part was being fully present. My own psychology, which is one of escapism and low resilience, made this difficult. But full immersion was the only way to let the words and actions of this community recondition me. The layers and layers of bad psychology, theology, and pollution from my Western culture were like tough set-in stains. When you spray stain remover on your laundry, you have to let it sit. You can't see the chemicals going about the cleaning, but the stain gets lighter. There were tiny adjustments, barely visible to the untrained eye, going on all day, every day, for 730 days. Immersing myself in this seminary, this community, has removed my layers of built-up mess. No reflection on the last 2 years would be complete without a pointed word or two from me about Plato's impact on my life. Pastor Jin once told the congregation in a sermon that there was one student who, in the course of study, had developed a lot of anger toward Plato and his impact on Western thought. He was talking about me. Understanding the gravity of what Plato stood for has irrevocably changed how I understand myself and the world around me. Plato's world of the forms is a world that I'm very familiar with, a world where dualism separates in me the abstract ideals from the grounded reality, placing more value in unattainable perfection than tangible, visible, and imperfect. Mind against my body. I've said it before, and I will say it again. I have the ability to judge myself from the outside, as if my thoughts are separate from my actions, because of Plato's ideas. It is the single most damaging thing in my life. Now, with this new understanding, I know that the very way I function is a product of history. It has allowed me to have grace toward myself and others, and I feel less ashamed and more indignant. That is a better place to grow from than shame. Shame is quiet, while indignation is loud. I've wept for my own psychology and that of all those who suffer, because Plato thought that the inside of his head was more beautiful than the human beings around him. You are all beautiful. This understanding of Plato's legacy in me and the world around me was just one of the many things that we learned at Underground Seminary, but it was truly a key turning point for me. I had to understand my deepest reactions and motivations in order to better absorb the other experiences and learning that we did together. I'm so thankful to God that I've experienced the joys of life with you all and have been embraced by the CAN community. Thank you for supporting me and loving me and being family here to me in Minnesota.
Hello. My name is Isaac Sanborn. This is a very exciting day. I just created you in Minnesotan, my mother tongue, and now I will translate for the non-Minnesotans in the room. Woo! It's great to be here! Yes. Two years ago, during one of our first classes at Underground Seminary, I was really feeling the crisis of my own character and of the culture that many of us have grown up in. And in a moment of desperation, I looked at Pastor Jin, who is my primary mentor, and I said, "What do you do when you realize you have the same disease as the cannibals? When you realize that you are part of a group that destroys indigenous cultures, exploits and commodifies the earth, and ruins everything in its path, and that you are personally incapable of human dignity in relationships," and very deadpan, Pastor Jin looked at me and said, "You join Underground Seminary, that's what." I already had, so I felt great. I felt very affirmed. In my final reflection, I shared that the verse that stuck out to me about growth and change is in the Gospel of Luke, where it says, "Jesus grew in wisdom, in stature, and in favor with God and man." And that I've changed in similar ways over the past 2 years. Wisdom is a way of seeing the world, a way of seeing others wisely and not deluded. Stature is a way of standing, a way of holding yourself, a way of being. And my way of standing has changed from nearly invisible and hard to hear to very present and warm. And favor with God and man is a way of relating with others. And in the past 2 years, I've gone from a suspicious, fearful way of relating to a confident and caring way of relating. That's how I've grown in the past 2 years. So now I want to thank my parents, Daniel and Mary Lee, for giving birth to me, for keeping me alive when I was a baby. That's no small thing. You have given me so much, and I wouldn't be standing here if it weren't for your love and support. In a country where faith and the importance of family are so scorned, you have always taught me to love God above all else and to love others in an intimate and caring family way. This community, our church community, and our seminary cohort have seen me open up and become more fully the person that you brought into this world. And to use a Minnesotan understatement, that's not bad. It's actually really good. In these past 2 years, I hope that you have felt my love for you growing and deepening, because it has. I want to thank this church next for feeding me, for inviting me into your homes, for giving me shelter, for showing me the way when I was lost, and for giving me all of your shoulders to cry on when the road was hard. as much as my parents and my extensive siblings are the family that God graciously gave to me when I entered the world, you all are the family that God has graciously given to me in adulthood. This is an amazing little church we have. And these past 2 years of seminary have been crucial to my own growth and healing, and this church made the seminary possible. And I want to thank you all for that. And finally, I want to thank the leaders of the seminary, Pastor Jin, Laura, and John. Your vision and passion for forming and cultivating Christian character in all of us and in me has been evident from the beginning. This is an amazing school, a school that is genuinely for the students, and the school is the people. You each have changed me personally at the cellular level. I am in a very real way because you are. And I'm so grateful for the love and consideration that you have put into creating this community that is, for me, a playground, a garden, a safe haven, a harbor to the rest of the world, and a home. It has meant so much. To close, I want to say, Saranghaeyo, Ya elskade, Te amo, I love you. Peace be with you all. And now, Laura Newby.
Good afternoon. I'm Laura Newby, as Isaac said. I've been a part of Church of All Nations for the past 10 years. 3 years ago, I partnered with Pastor Jin and John to dream up this underground seminary. As the only one of us without a Master of Divinity, I had the privilege of also joining the first cohort as a student. During the first week of our classes, I cried almost every day because I was so happy to finally be studying. For years, as Pastor Jin mentioned, I searched for the right program to learn about the world, economics, politics, history, philosophy, anthropology, etc. I couldn't find a program broad enough, affordable enough, or bold and honest enough to fit my interests. I also wanted to study the Bible, but most of the content in traditional seminary programs was not of interest to me. In addition, the most fertile soil I found for acquiring wisdom has been my church right here, Church of All Nations, where the shared life of a committed community brings forth riches in knowledge, insight, and experience. That was the kind of education I was already receiving and didn't want to lose. So when we finally started classes in the fall of 2014, I felt a huge wave of relief and gratification at, after so many years, finally being able to dive into the topics I was so hungry to learn more about. We have learned a lot of things together about neoliberalism and how it became the dominant political and economic philosophy of the United States. We learned more thoroughly how the thoughts of Plato, as Jordan mentioned, have shaped the psychology, worldview, and faith of Western people in largely unhelpful ways. We spent months grounding ourselves in world history and local history. We learned about the Dakota people who have lived and live on this land for so many generations before colonialism, about the broken treaties, confinement and concentration camp at Fort Snelling, and what a vision for justice would look like now. We learned about how money and debt function in our economy. We have covered an endless and broad range of topics, and I loved every minute of my growing understanding of the world and what my faith had to say about these things. We also spent significant time studying the Bible, learning about the historical, social, and political context in which each book was written. Understanding the backdrop, I felt the Bible come alive to me with a relevance I have never experienced before. I recognize personally the struggle of God's people in various time periods and in various ways, trying to retain their humanity and follow God's way of justice, mercy, generosity, and love in the face of violent empires and their own exploitative kings and religious leaders. One of my favorite topics that we covered in our seminary was getting to know our local watershed. To truly reroot ourselves, we began to examine more closely the trees and plants around us. We started paying attention to these weeds growing around our church building, many of which are now in these bouquets. One memorable event that we did to learn more about our watershed was to take a canoeing trip down the Rice Creek River a few weeks ago. We were learning about our local watershed, which, if you're familiar with the area, flows into Rice Creek north of here. On a beautiful sunny day, we canoed from Long Lake, planning to make our way along the Rice Creek to the Mississippi River. What we did not put together was the consequence of all the heavy rain that had fallen the week before and the swelling that the river was experiencing as a result. Now, we were studying watershed, so we should have known that all the other rivers were flowing into that one, making it exponentially higher. So the result was a canoeing trip that was supposed to be a leisurely canoe ride, but ended up stressful, crash-ridden, and involving two canoe tippings, three lost shoes, three waterlogged cell phones, and an early exit of the river. It was a good lesson in the humbling power of nature. And Jim Bear will never let us forget it. It's hard to share in such a short time all that we learned, but more than anything, these 2 years were about transforming ourselves, which has happened in profound ways. Finally, I'd like to give my thank yous, which include Pastor Jin for having the courage, even audacity at points, to create something so bold and new, even in the face of much criticism. For Soonbeck, who supports these crazy ideas in her quiet, steady way. To John and Silgi for being wonderful colleagues who truly believe in the work we are doing as a church and seminary and have demonstrated so with their lives. To Jordan, Isaac, and Stephen, who hunger after the food that satisfies and not what the world gives. To my family and friends who are always supportive of me, even when they have no idea what the heck I am doing exactly in this church and seminary. To my housemates who have shown support to the seminary in countless ways and have put up with my endless nights of studying and working. And finally, to the elders and members of Church of All Nations, whose love, ministry, vision, and care birthed Underground Seminary and have supported it so thoroughly and deeply during these first few years. To all of you, thank you.
We're going to move into a time of presenting the diplomas, but before we do that, I want to give you a sense of what exactly has been accomplished by these students the last couple of years. It has been the joy of my life to participate in this experiment, to journey with them, and to be involved in shaping the curriculum, but more importantly, experiencing daily life with them, leading the house that most of them live in. So a little bit of context. First of all, you'll see through that that this has not just been an academic experience, although that has certainly been a part of it. Most of us live over at the Fink House, we call it. Fink House is short for Finkenwald, which I'll explain in a second. There's 8 people that have lived there most of the time. The daily rhythms that we have experienced have been Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. From 8:30 until 12:30, we have met for class time, where we discuss our readings, we give presentations to one another. We cook meals then at 12:30, we have lunch together. We then study together for a couple of hours. Then we have work projects in the afternoon, which the first year involved building a house, which we all learned a lot of carpentry skills. This is not accidental for us, that we learn really practical life skills along the way. And then we would do dinner. And you know, Pastor Jin mentioned Silgi and Soonbeck. Silgi volunteered very early to do meals for our house and those we invited over Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and often many other nights of the week. She fed us and cared for us as a house and infused the Fink House with her spirit, and it was just a wonderful gift. Soonbeck, she opens up her house throughout the week for church members. It's amazing, including those who stay with her and Pastor Jin and the family. Thursday nights, we would have meals at their house, the whole seminary, along with friends and others. So we were well-fed. If you follow us on Facebook, you know that. You see the meals that we're eating. We have really found that food is culture, food is life, and it's critically important to all that we do. And then throughout the weekends, you know, we do a lot of other things as well. In the mornings, we often meet, and sometimes we have a sharing time with each other for the first hour where we reflect on how we're doing, what we're feeling. We practice, Jordan calls it feelings time. That was always a highlight of the week. We sing together in the mornings. We do Bible studies. We reflect on the upcoming text for Sunday morning. We reflect on current events, and then we dive into our studies. So that's a little bit about the overall rhythm of our seminary life. Now, as far as just a quick overview of what it is that we've been studying, you heard snapshots here and there, and I want to especially touch on one thing, because this is really important for all that we've done. An early patron saint of Underground Seminary, he's certainly not the only one now, we have many, but he did help shape our vision, was Dietrich Bonhoeffer. If you know about Bonhoeffer, he was a German theologian, pastor, and resistor in the 1920s, 30s, amidst Nazi Germany. Bonhoeffer increasingly, as his life went on, wrestled with what had become of the church, that the faith had become spiritualized, it had become academic, it had become otherworldly. It did not make a difference, which allowed people to get so swept up in the ideology that was emerging in his time. For Bonhoeffer, faith had to be real, incarnational. It had to be lived or it was nothing. For Bonhoeffer, what to be being a Christian meant was to be a disciple. It was to be a witness, and it was to be a witness as a person individually, but also through life together, communally. So Bonhoeffer, frustrated with what was going on in his time, started what was called Underground Seminary. They gathered in Finkenwald, and they lived together, and they learned another way. Character formation, along with rigorous academic study, trying to make faith real. One of Bonhoeffer's primary targets, he called it Docetism. It's an ancient church heresy. Docetism is rooted in Neoplatonism, it's rooted in Plato. And that is where the faith just becomes otherworldly. It's more about the world of the forms, whether it's in the form of spirituality, an otherworldly thing, or whether it's in the form of abstract academic theological knowledge. Both were prevalent in his time. And so he countered this at every turn. He's got this huge book, Ethics, that lays out this whole vision for a different way of understanding life, faith as life together, and our life together then leads us to advocate for those that we are close to, for those that we enter into relationship with, even as they're not like us, we learn more about them, and then we enter into advocacy. And he did that, and he paid the price, and as many of us know, he is now one of the great church martyrs who was executed by Hitler just before the end of the war. So he was an early inspiration for us, and we have spent a lot of time trying to dig in and understand what happened to the Christian faith. So for a lot of us, we don't know that we're doing this, but we tend to start with Plato, the spiritualizing of the text. And we then read the Apostle Paul through Plato. So we understand Paul is our canon within the canon. Paul is the primary lens through which we interpret the rest of the Bible. And we do that through various doctrines, justification by faith, and there's a whole bunch of them, all of which are important. But we're filtering them right through the lens of Plato, and then we read Jesus through Paul. So Jesus becomes primarily about otherworldly salvation of some sort, rather than a model to follow with our daily lives and somebody who has something critically important to say about the world around him. The Roman imperial world, of which Judea had been colonized and the temple was had been co-opted for Roman aims. Jesus had something to say about that. But we read Jesus through Paul, who we read through Plato, so we don't see it. And then through Jesus, read through Paul, we then interpret the Old Testament. And everything in the Old Testament then becomes a pointer to Jesus and is interpreted through various doctrines and made otherworldly with nothing to say about our world today. We have reversed that. We very intentionally start with the Old Testament. One of the things that wasn't mentioned is that over the course of 10 months here, our students read the Bible cover to cover, every page. With a number of other references and stuff alongside, but we immersed ourselves in those ancient texts with the goal of understanding what is happening with the early people of God, Israel, as they're being formed, as they're being called out of Egypt, one of the early empires, earliest empires in the course of human history, right in the middle of the Fertile Crescent and between the great rivers, Tigris and Euphrates, and you have the Nile down below, and this region of Palestine that is starting to be taken over by first the rise of Egypt, and then Assyria, and then Babylon. Then you have Persia, you have Greece, and you have Rome. And the whole time, this biblical text gives us stories of people wrestling with this reality. How do we keep our humanity? How do we keep our culture, our sense of a people? How do we keep our connection to our ancestors and our connection to the land with all this happening? It doesn't give one answer. It's a struggle. It's an argument internal in the text, wrestling with this question. Prophets emerge to point out when people are going astray. And Jesus lands right in the middle of this tradition. And he pulls out the little tradition within Judaism. The people who struggle to be faithful. He highlights certain prophetic texts, and he calls his people to that way when they had forgotten it in the midst of Roman-occupied Palestine. And he gathers his followers, and he disciples them. He calls them to the way of love, way of advocacy, the way of the cross. And at the end, he pays the price for it, which he also coaches his disciples about all along the way. Paul has an encounter with this Jesus, and recognizes that the resurrection is God's validation of this way of life, and Paul goes and forms assemblies all across the known Roman world at that time to live into, manifest, embody something different. This is what we were grounding our students in throughout. So to do that, they had to understand the way the world works, as Jesus did. They had to understand the rise of civilizations, the rise of empires, the intersection of politics, economics, ideology, or theology. And they had to understand the way that the Christian faith in the 300s got completely co-opted by Platonism as a form of Roman ideology to advance Christendom that moved by the sword, as Laura said in her song. So we have wrestled with the impact of Christendom and with the ways that gave rise to colonization and the ways that the doctrine of discovery, which is the doctrine of the church, justified the colonization of this land. And how do we then live as Christians with that? How do we live faithfully, recover, retrieve what's actually in the text over and against our own tradition that teaches us otherwise, teaches us various forms of supremacy, Christian supremacy, white supremacy, the very opposite of what the incarnation and Jesus' witness and the retrieval of this little tradition in Israel was all about. So we did all of this. For 18 months, we wrestled with this. And we traveled, we hosted conferences about the stuff that we are talking about and learning, one on the doctrine of discovery in the church, grappling with what is the legacy of this and what is our responsibility, one on indigenous settler relations and watershed discipleship, and reflecting on what does it mean to reroot ourselves in the land, in history, in community, to recover a lost sense of identity, and to take responsibility. And the whole reason we're doing all of this is to take responsibility for our lives and for the church. We're not about escaping the faith. We're about taking responsibility from it and really learning from it, and through that, learning from so many other cultures and faiths along the way, so that we can lead to lives of reconciliation, reconciliation with various people, and reconciliation with the land itself. So this is what we have been doing. These students have read so many books. They have met for 2 years straight in the classroom in the morning. They have done construction. They have learned to garden. We've all been cooking together. There's been so many different aspects that we traveled to Korea. We traveled to the Pine Ridge Reservation. We hosted conferences, put on other conferences as well. It has been a rich, rich, rich time. And their attitude, their spirit throughout has been incredible. And in the process, they have changed me and they have taught me. So I have learned a different way of teaching and a pedagogy. One where I am transformed in the process of attempting to teach something as the students teach me back. So I thank all of you. I thank you for this experience. I'm going to miss you, but we're also still going to be living together, so it's okay. Just different people in the classroom, that's all. But we will keep learning and we will keep growing together. So with that, I want to invite up to stand over here Stephen Forsyth, Jordan Wright, Isaac Sanborn, and Laura Newby, who will stand up here as a leader and present and also receive a diploma as we present these diplomas. Thank you.
In addition to our diplomas, we have a little gift for the seminarians. We have a bottle of dirt for each of you to remind you that from the dust you came and to the dust you shall return. This dust is from Church of All Nations, from the Fink House, and from the Rice Creek, Mississippi Confluence. We love you.
These diplomas say Underground Seminary, Decolonizing Christian Leadership. And we did this education in the Minnesota and Okotoks region. And we are going to grant a Master of Divinity, summa cum laude, to Stephen E. Forsyth, beloved Son of God. and student, Laura Newby, the Master of Divinity, summa cum laude.
Just want to make a quick note that everything I shared, our course of study, we have a document that details everything we've done over 2 years. So for anybody who's interested afterwards, I'll have that in the back. If you're a couple or family, just take one so we have enough to go around. Thanks.
One of the pastors on staff, Pastor Jennifer Jacobs, has graciously volunteered to say a prayer for our precious graduates. And they will come to kneel and receive the blessing through laying on of hands, which is an ancient Christian tradition, and we ask everyone to come forward to lay hands as well on the students or the person in front of you.
Let's join our hearts in prayer. Gracious Creator, we celebrate the accomplishments that have culminated to this day. We celebrate not a finishing, but a beginning. We celebrate a calling into a world that we know is not yet ready to receive this revelation. But you have, in the past 2 years, transformed the lives of these individuals and so many that have been affected and touched by the work that they have been doing. And we know that that will continue for years and years and years to come. Amen. We ask your special blessing upon these students. Lord, it has been my honor to know them, to fall in love with them these last 2 years, and to shepherd and care for them. They have stood in sacred places. They have felt your healing touch. They have discovered and known the healing potential of living close to the earth. May they continue that work. May each one find the calling that you have laid out for them to bring the fullness of humanity to the world. May they never, ever, ever forget, as they have learned since day one, that we are all related. We are all relatives. Yes. We ask these things in your precious name. Amen.
Amen. Sisters and brothers in Christ our Lord, we truly give thanks to God for you. Thank you for celebrating with us here at this time, coming from near and far, and being colleagues and friends and family to us all. We truly, truly thank you for that. Will you rise now for the benediction? Children of God, servants of the one Lord Jesus Christ. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and give you peace now and forevermore. Amen.